From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the state's education commissioner says she's open to granting teacher evaluation waivers for an extra year. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on protesters in Shenango County pushing for secession. And the state horse racing industry gathers in Saratoga to discuss the retirement of thoroughbreds. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York's education commissioner says she's open to granting waivers to delay new teacher evaluations for an additional year, saying the new system should not be hastily pushed through because of an arbitrary date. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The latest version of teacher and principal evaluations were pushed through in this year's state budget by Governor Cuomo. They require that the reviews be based more heavily on controversial standardized tests, and the new plans are due this fall. The State Board of Regents voted to permit schools who find the deadline too tight to apply for a waiver for essentially a one-year delay. And now the state's education commissioner, Mary Ellen Elia, who's been on the job since early July, says she's open to granting the waivers if meeting the deadline puts more stress on already overtaxed school districts.
They have that tool to use, and if they need to, I don't think we should put that much more stress on them. Let them get the waiver and then have the time they need to really do something that's good.
Elia says the evaluations can be a positive experience if they result in more support for teachers who need to improve some of their skills.
The reality is the teachers are going to be the ones that make it work in a classroom every day for the kids across this state. And so it's an important thing for us to make sure that this is done appropriately and not pushed through just because of a date.
Carl Korn, a spokesman for the teachers' union, New York State United Teachers, says the new performance review rules are complex and convoluted, and it's taking time to wade through what he calls the minutia of the law.
It's more important to get it right or as close to being right as possible than to try to meet an artificial deadline that was never realistic in the first place.
Korn says the Education Department has not yet approved some of the assessments needed for local school districts who might decide on alternative exams to evaluate their teachers. He says school districts and their teachers' unions are trying to make the best of a bad situation. The School Boards Association, however, is not as enthusiastic about the possibility of numerous schools applying for and receiving waivers. The group's Tim Creamer says if districts trying to bargain with their unions know they can put off tough decisions for another year, many will.
I would not want to be telling people, plan on a waiver, likely you're going to get the waiver. I mean, to me, I think you're pulling the rug out for any good faith negotiations that might be taking place right now.
Nevertheless, he says he expects significant numbers of school districts will apply for the waivers. And Creamer points out that although the regents approved the delay option, they were unable to rescind a provision that says if schools don't meet the November 15th deadline, they have to give back some state aid awarded to them in the budget back in the spring.
That's money that they have budgeted. They have planned for its use. And I would be very cautious about playing that game and being very fast and loose with the rules.
Governor Cuomo has said he hopes the waivers will be the exception and not the rule. State Education Commissioner Elia does not work for the governor directly. She's chosen by the regents, who are picked by the legislature. But she says she does not think her views on the waivers are at odds with Cuomo. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, our Dave Lucas has a story on the program this week that says more than 150 years after the end of the Civil War, secession was on the minds of protesters in New York this past weekend as hundreds turned out for a rally in Bainbridge and Shenango County. They want to secede from New York.
Well, first of all, there will be a lot of people who say bye-bye. But, you know, this business of secession has been going on for years and years. Norman Mailer runs for mayor of New York, and he makes that point that he wants New York to secede. Long Island has talked about secession. Secession is a dirty word in this country because obviously we had a civil war and we lost so many good people as a result of that. And we don't like the word secession. But politicians know that if they scream secession at the top of their lungs, somebody will sit up and take notice, and angry people will say, we should secede. But there isn't going to be any secession. We know there's not going to be secession, and that's it.
You spoke with the chief trader of the $184.5 billion New York State Pension Fund, which is Thomas DiNapoli, the state controller this week, about a number of things. And one of them being, of course, the dives in the market. And he said, quote, his heart was in his throat.
I'll bet it was. My heart's in my throat. And I have a wonderful 401k or whatever it's called these days with Tia Kreff, which has been founded to watch teachers and others, public servants, money. And they've been very good. But when you have a dive like this, you can lose $100,000, $50,000 if you're at the end of your career very easily. And then what do you do? Can you imagine what it must be like to be controller of New York State and to see the market go down 500 points in one day? And you know that you're going to be judged in the end by how your pension funds, which you are the sole trustee of, are doing. Now, of course, I have a wonderful wife, and every time I turn around to her and I say, honey, we're poor, she says, oh, no, sweetie, it'll come back. And it always does come back so far.
Some of our listeners may remember that the controller was sort of put in a position to either choose or not choose public campaign financing during the last election, which he opted out of, but he has always been in favor of it, and he's come out with another push toward that end.
He has been pushing it for years. The governor and the legislature came up with a plan that only the controller, they were going to punish him, let's face it. Only the controller would run as a, quote, test. And, of course, DiNapoli said, not me. I'm not going to be the sole guinea pig here. It should be for everybody. And, of course, he was right. And nobody seemed to care. It was a power play that went nowhere. David, the idea of public campaign financing is going to be decided when there is a decision made about whether the Senate will go Democratic or not in New York State. And then if that happens, a whole bunch of stuff will change. And one of them, of course, is the idea of public campaign financing. Now, not so fast, we hear, and here's why. People in the Assembly, which is, you know, overwhelmingly Democratic, got there under the old system. Now, the problem is that if the state adopts campaign financing, Bernie the bartender will definitely run for office, and that will threaten the existence of some of the incumbents who survive at a 95% rate and who do not get challenged in primaries for the most part. And that's why, even though the Democrats have always yelled the Republicans won't let us have it, it'll be very interesting to see when the push comes to the shove whether or not the Democrats will actually vote for a progressive system of fair campaign financing.
Finally, Alan, the old saying, the only constant is change. And there's been a change to the Legislative Gazette newspaper, which birthed this program, the Legislative Gazette radio show.
It did. Of course, they're completely separate. But the newspaper, which I am publisher of, has felt the same visages that every other newspaper in America is feeling. Advertisers are not advertising in the way that they used to. The paper with State University of New York Research Foundation project, I started it many, many years ago, and it made money for a long, long time. But then came the moment when people weren't advertising. There were some very good friends who understood what this educational project was all about, who put money into it. But for the most part, it dropped off like every other newspaper. And so it's going to continue its wonderful educational work, taking people from all these schools and letting them have their practicum in the last semester of their time or at some point. And it'll be online, just like everything else is going to be online. There are people who are predicting there will be no more newspapers in just a short time.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you, David.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Clinton Correctional Facility in Dannemora, New York, has been under the microscope since the escape of two prisoners from its maximum security division in June, which led to a 23-day multi-million-dollar manhunt. This past weekend, the prison was placed on lockdown after two prisoner altercations. We get more from our North Country Bureau Chief, Pat Bradley.
No corrections officers were injured after prisoners had to be subdued following two fights this past weekend. But the fights were serious enough that prison administrators placed the facility on lockdown. Prisoners have been confined to their cells while corrections officers conduct a complete search of the facility. New York State Corrections Officers and Police Benevolent Association Northern Region Vice President Chris Hansen explains what happened.
On Thursday evening, there was an altercation in the north yard between 4 to 6 inmates approximately, and the inmates were subdued and the facility continued as normal. On Saturday, they had another altercation. At that point, they dropped chemical agents into the yard, and that was a larger altercation between inmates with weapons. And at that point, because of the violence escalating at Clinton Correctional, the department and administration at Clinton Correctional decided to go into the lockdown mode.
The New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision declined to be interviewed. The agency issued a statement on Saturday noting, quote, "The department took proactive steps to lock down the facility to ensure the safety of staff and others. The facility is expected to return to normal operations sometime next week," unquote. Assemblywoman Janet Dupree says she will be at Clinton Correctional on Wednesday to meet with prison officials, corrections officers, and inmates.
The main focus for all of us is the safety and security of the people who are within those walls. So this gives the opportunity for the correction officers to safely check each cell for weapons and any contraband that's there. You know, what happens on the streets also happens inside the walls. There are gangs and they don't like each other.
Queensboro Community College Professor of History Jeff Hall is an expert on upstate prisons. He notes that lockdowns across prison systems are common.
They were pretty frequent in the 1980s and 90s and into the early part of this century. Lockdown became the preferred form of handling any kind of disruption or disturbance by prisoners. Now, sometimes lockdown was a result of actual disruptions and disturbances, meal strikes and work strikes, small fires, fights. And sometimes lockdowns would be instituted to prevent potential outbreaks of violence. So it's been a tool that's been used quite often.
Hall adds that considering the stresses following the escape of Richard Matt and David Sweat and the climate of investigation surrounding the Dannemora prison, he expects more incidents and more lockdowns there.
I think that the attention that the corruption inside that prison is receiving will provoke a response among prisoners. And history tells us this, not just in the North Country, but across the United States. I think the state prison system in New York is reaching a boiling point.
The Auburn Correctional Facility in Cayuga County had also been in lockdown. The New York State Corrections Department lifted the lockdown there Tuesday.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Leaders in New York's horse racing industry assembled this week in Saratoga Springs to discuss the retirement of thoroughbreds. a topic that has long been the subject of equine advocates. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and filed this report.
Most of the talk during the summer meet focuses on stakes races, upsets, and exactas, but the day-long Retired Racehorse Summit at the Fassig-Tipton Pavilion, hosted by the New York State Gaming Commission, aimed to clarify what happens to horses when their racing days are done. Robert Williams, executive director of the commission, said the meeting is intended to raise the profile of an issue that has often fallen under the radar.
The commission has long professed that responsible stewardship of the horse includes factoring in the entire life cycle and ensuring that these athletes have viable options once their racing careers are over.
Perhaps one of the most shocking stories related to thoroughbred retirement is that of Ferdinand, the 1986 Kentucky Derby winner reportedly sent to slaughter in 2002 after living on a Japanese stud farm. Since then, advocates have called on leaders in Washington to approve a national ban on horse slaughter. Williams said in New York, the commission is limited in its ability to care for horses, but has brought actions against the licenses of owners who have mistreated horses. Jack Knowlton of Saratoga Stables, the organization that owns 2003 Kentucky Derby and Preakness Stakes winner Funnyside, served on a state-appointed task force on racehorse retirement. Knowlton said a report released by that task force in 2011 is guiding research on the population and whereabouts of New York breds.
The ultimate goal of this is to provide the thoroughbred industry with the following information. Where do horses go after they leave the track? How many have second careers? How many are shipped out of the country? How many have died? How many cannot be found?
New York also now has an appointed equine medical director and mortality review board. One of a handful of the day's panel discussions focused on the current status of retirement initiatives and programs in New York. Rick Schossberg is in charge of Take the Lead, a program by the New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association that finds homes for horses retiring from New York Racing Association tracks and is on track to serve its 150th horse. Schossberg says he tells all of his staff, current and prospective owners, a simple message to ensure a healthy future. Start with the animal's welfare.
So whether it's running in a race that you may or may not want to run in, or whether you have an injury and you think it's time to stop, start with the wellness of the horse. All the rest of it will fall into place. And I think the whole industry can take that as an example of really getting down to the nuts and bolts of it.
A healthy horse is also less expensive to care for in retirement. David Brown of the Finger Lakes Horsemen's Association says while healthy horses may be able to find a second career in horse shows or on a polo team, limited resources make it difficult to rehabilitate and find a home for injured horses.
There's always outlets, but for the horse that's disabled, that's seriously disabled, we haven't benefited that population at all, and that's a real need.
Rick Violet Jr., head of the National Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, says steady funding remains a challenge for programs at large.
In this industry, we tend to keep going to the same people for a handout, and the same very philanthropic people, and whether it's help the backside, whether it's for research, whether it's, you know, for the retirement of horses. And that's, you wear out people. While you still have to go there, we have to find some standardized funding.
Violet said he'd also like to see more accredited facilities in New York to care for the horses.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics, I'm David Gustina. More than 150 years after the end of the Civil War, secession was on the minds of protesters in New York this past weekend. Hundreds turned out for a rally in Bainbridge in Chenango County. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports now many live within miles of the Pennsylvania border and believe secession could have a large economic impact on their communities.
Aiming at heightening awareness and gaining community support, residents of several small towns in the Southern Tier are vocal about the idea of redrawing border lines, seceding from New York to become part of Pennsylvania.
I would describe it as a very spirited and enthusiastic rally, and measure the success of it by the fact that people stayed, people didn't leave, and the crowd grew larger as the time went on.
That's Carolyn Price, president of the Upstate New York Towns Association. Proponents of secession argue the Empire State has the highest taxes and is the most overregulated state in the country. They say they want more freedom, tax relief, and liberty for all. For them, shifting the borderline makes sense.
That is allowed under Article 4, Clause 3, Section 1 of the United States Constitution. It does take approval by both states, by New York legislature and Pennsylvania legislature, and would have to be approved by the United States Congress.
So definitely a long shot, but secession has been successfully carried out in the distant past. What is now the state of Vermont was once part of New York. Price notes there is another option.
Dividing New York State into two autonomous regions, upstate being named New Amsterdam and downstate New York, and there would be a limited state government, still a New York state government. And that is being recommended to go through the Constitutional Convention process outlined in the New York State Constitution.
Secessionists have, among other grievances, issues with the SAFE Act, Common Core, and the fracking ban. Secession advocate Sandra Davis tells Time Warner Cable News,
we'll be able to thrive, you know. We'll see natural gas drilling, which will make us independent on our own. We won't have to count on the state to help us out, you know. We can be thriving on our own, you know, little entities.
Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, a statewide elected official, addressed secession on this week's Capital Connection with WAMC's Alan Shartok, linking the movement to stagnant job growth.
You know, it is in many ways still the tale of two economies, and particularly when you look at that kind of central swath of the state, you know, from the Pennsylvania border on up, you know, through the North Country, you're still talking about a negative picture as far as jobs. And that's one reason why in many of those communities population is going down. And often what happens is the population left behind is older, often in need of more services, poorer, and that creates other kinds of pressures on local government. So some of that frustration is certainly reflective of the fact that not every region of the state has benefited from this stronger economy. What is the challenge for us in New York? Keep the recovery going, keep the jobs growing, but have that prosperity be more evenly distributed.
Governor Andrew Cuomo's press office did not immediately respond to a request for comment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1536 or just listen or podcast on the web, wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.